Hi, I'm Dr. Bill Deagle, MD, AAEM, ACAM, A4M of NutraMedical.com and a consultant providing email advice free on advanced protocols for your optimized wellness and advanced technologies to heal and regenerate you. You can contact us at NutraMedical.com, that's NutriMedical.com, or 888-212-8871. You get free email starter protocols of our top medical-grade nutraceuticals, initial testing, and recommendations for your own primary doctor to do, as well as recommendations to give you an idea of a consultation and a full protocol to try to help you regenerate your tissues, heal naturally without the use of toxic polypharmacy. I can send test kits to you as well anywhere in the world and provide you recommendations to referral of specialty clinics worldwide. So contact me, Dr. Bill Deagle, at NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com or 888-212-8871. The NutriMedical Report, and after a week hiatus, Lowell Ponte is back and lots of topics to talk about. Lowell, we have a couple of articles here, one from last week, and of course the latest one, which you mentioned is counter-journalistically. It's not following the major news item talking sheets, in other words, or the FIFA World Cup that's going on right this moment between England and their adversary. We have a couple of different articles. The first one was basically from last week. It was a new column for July 4th, Freedom, Fear, and Independence Day. And, of course, I'd like you to cover that first. And then the second article is your new column for the Wednesday show today, Who, a WHO, which is a World Health Organization, owns the weather. So let's start off with the article from last week and get into some of the complexities of what's going on of Freedom, Fear, and Independence Day. What's going on in terms of the group, if you want to call it collective, mind and behavior of society. In the past, if we disagreed, we'd have dialogue. Now it's considered improper, offensive to actually have a different opinion. And in fact, it's grounds for violence on the part of the left if they have a different opinion. And they're scrambling. In fact, you can see the Democratic Party kind of losing it. Not only saying and putting XX for the women's movement when they wanted to protest the new appointee to the Supreme Court because they didn't even know who it was when they actually put their documents together. We have a situation now where they're even wanting to get a prior opinion from the new judge, Kavanaugh, before he even sits in his office. And actually, the precedent over the last 50-plus years is you never ask a judge in advance of a ruling because it's a collective ruling based on the law, not an opinion. And which is kind of amazing to me is even previous statements that you can see in video clips from, say, Chuck Schumer, where he mentioned last year that you never ask a judge to give a prior opinion on what he may rule in the future. That's just not good etiquette, and it's certainly not the kind of court you want, is where you want to have these political activists literally legislating from the bench based on an opinion they gave in a video clip to an opposing Democratic senator trying to cross-examine them. It's, like, bizarre, isn't it?
It is. Well, we'll come back to the two columns, both of which appeared at WND or WorldNetDaily.com. But we should indeed touch on the immediate news.
Right.
As we speak, Donald Trump is in NATO Europe.
Right.
About to go to Russia, or rather to go to Finland to meet with Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia.
Right.
And we're seeing all kinds of chaos in Europe. A major challenge has been made to Miss May, the Prime Minister of England, by, among others, her Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson resigning, all over the fact that she is still willing to enact Brexit, but she now wants to put so many conditions on it, so many strings and gimmicks, that in effect it amounts to England, to the United Kingdom, continuing to be in the European Union. Its trade, its policies, many of its laws are still conditioned on what the EU wants under her vision. And this, according to Boris Johnson and other Brexit supporters, is simple betrayal.
Right. Well, she's betrayed from the beginning, though. It's nothing new. It's amazing that she managed to lie her way into the position of being prime minister, when in fact she's never been a supporter of Brexit.
No. No, indeed she hasn't, although nominally a conservative and a vicar's daughter, which is how she used to be described. We'll come back to what that may mean.
Yeah, that sounds similar with Angela. That's the Angela Merkel effect, a vicar's daughter, unreasonably righteous with no basis in reality, common sense, decency, or logic.
I think that's a fair description, even though very serious and willing not to smile for long periods of time.
Right, just trying to solidify that it was based on reality and not the fantasy of a globalist bureaucrat that wants to rule over the representative government of individual nations in Europe, including the British. Flood them with foreigners, steal their technology, and ultimately have a United States of Europe, which is a totalitarian socialist regime, which is interesting. It's kind of an aversion of the Marxist regimes that destroyed many people, hundreds of millions, in the 20th century in Russia and China. Don't they get it? This is not a good formula for either an economy or a so-called collective of nations, which should be more like a United States of Europe, which is to follow the U.S. model, right?
Indeed. Now in the meanwhile, President Trump has named Brett Kavanaugh one of two on his final list of four who were actually law clerks for Anthony Kennedy, the retiring Supreme Court justice to be replaced. And here's an interesting thought I jotted down on an envelope the other night. If you look at the United States, we are still nominally a Protestant country, right?
Right.
Well, as a Protestant Christian country, here's what we have on the U.S. Supreme Court. John Roberts, Chief Justice, Roman Catholic. Anthony Kennedy, Roman Catholic. Brett Kavanaugh to replace him, Roman Catholic. Clarence Thomas, Roman Catholic. Samuel Alito, Roman Catholic. Neil Gorsuch, he was raised as a Roman Catholic, although now he attends the Episcopal Church. But the Episcopal Church calls itself Protestant yet Catholic.
Right.
It is basically...
Well, it's basically the British version of the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, the only main difference is they replaced the Pope with King Henry VIII.
Exactly. Yeah, but it's all the same trappings.
Everything. In fact, the Episcopal Church and the Anglican Church are so close to the Roman Catholic Church that I think the Roman Catholic Church acknowledges as valid almost all of their rights.
Including the right, by the way,
if you're baptized, for example, an Anglican or an Episcopalian, you're considered by the Roman Catholic Church to be properly baptized.
And even the Vatican has actually accepted the right of actually transubstantiation of the host and wine by Anglican bishops. Did you know that?
I'm not surprised. I mean, they've been in discussion ever since the separation. I mean,
after the martyrdom of Thomas More, etc.
Oh, well, what's a martyrdom or two?
Yeah, exactly.
My friend.
What's a burning at the stake?
You may ask, what do Democrats do? Well, if you look at the Democrats and leftists on the court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Jewish. Elena Kagan, Jewish. Stephen Breyer, Jewish. Only Sonia Sotomayor is different. She is Catholic. So, in other words, our Supreme Court was and will be made up essentially entirely of Catholics and Jews in a Protestant country.
Now, that's really interesting.
I thought that was interesting.
But it's interesting also that some of the appointees that Reagan did, which was Stevens, and what was the other female justice he put forward? I think it was Kagan, wasn't it?
Oh. Reagan put forward O'Connor.
O'Connor, okay.
From Arizona.
It turns out that both of these justices, although we thought they were conservative, were actually on the left on big issues, including Stevens, dealing with the gay and lesbian crowd. So, you know, they rescued Roe versus Wade, which was going to go down back 30 years ago, and they rescued it from being wiped from the bench, because remember, it was only an opinion, it was never law. I have had Dr. Fred Graves on the show over many years, who's an expert, knows the Supreme Court justices personally, and said specifically that it was only an opinion by a minority of the judges, and they actually knew it was an opinion, not based on biological facts, because if it had been 3 years later when ultrasound was presented, they wouldn't have been able to pass it. 78% of women in Oklahoma that have to see an ultrasound, even if they've signed for an abortion, will not proceed with the abortion once they realize it's a baby. It's not their body. It's not a lump of tissue. It's actually a baby playing with their toes and sucking their thumb. So they have to understand, we have to understand, this is sanctioned murder by the state, and the globalists and the leftists and the pro-abortionists, which are both on the left and right, mainly left, are basically sanctioning murder and have killed not 50 million, not 55 million, but 60 million Americans and also babies around the world. And because of that, we have a massive immigration issue that's changing the culture. That's what's going on.
And we have another strange similarity among the Supreme Court justices that most people don't think about.
We'll come right back to it. Welcome back, and Lowell, you've got some more information. Let's please continue.
Well, sure. Among those on the Supreme Court or now Brett Kavanaugh nominated for the Supreme Court contemplate the very narrow base from which these people are chosen. Not only are they all Roman Catholic or essentially Jewish, they are also basically from only two schools. Chief Justice John Roberts, Harvard. Anthony Kennedy, Harvard. Brett Kavanaugh, Yale. Whether he was a member of Skull and Bones, we don't know. But like the Bushes, he was from Yale, and he came up under the Bushes. Clarence Thomas, Yale. Samuel Alito, Yale. Neil Gorsuch, Harvard. You see the interesting challenge. Then you go to the Democrats. Ruth Bader Ginsburg finally got her law degree from Columbia Law School, but she spent most of her time attending Harvard Law School. Elena Kagan from Harvard. Stephen Breyer from Harvard. Sonia Sotomayor, the one Catholic named by Democrats, from Yale. And by the way, I think it's time we begin pointing out that this almost fanatic hatred Democrats were showing, especially to that woman being considered, who was a devout Roman Catholic, the one of whom Dianne Feinstein said, the orthodoxy or the dogma burns hot in you, meaning you're just too much of a Catholic. You know, if I were a Hispanic, if I were a Latino, I would look at that and say, you know, Democrats don't admit it, but they really hate people like me. They hate Hispanics for our Catholicism. They are secret anti-Catholic bigots. And that's what Democrats, in fact, really are. I mean, the Ku Klux Klan, as Harry Truman once put it, he didn't join the Ku Klux Klan as a young man because they were anti-black. He joined the Ku Klux Klan because they were anti-Catholic.
Yeah.
And there is a great deal of that. That it has always been deep in the heart and soul of the Democratic Party. If I were a Latino or a Hispanic, I could never bring myself to vote for a political party like the Democrats that secretly hate and try to destroy and deny positions to Roman Catholics.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what would you say the total modus of Roman Catholics that are American, especially high academic Roman Catholics, what do you think their modus is? Because some of them are actually kind of leftist, but the majority of them are more conservative. I found this out the hard way, because I just started doing talks about 25, 30 years ago on pro-life across the United States and Canada, long before I even started doing radio shows, either in Colorado Springs or Clear Channel, which I did years before I even did Genesis 13 and a half years ago. And what I found was interesting, when I traveled around to various cities and towns, that 95% of the Catholics would agree to let me speak at their church, or they said some reason that was plausible otherwise. But only about 5 to 10% of Protestants would allow me to speak in their church about pro-life issues. And the Catholics are much more, in a sense, pro-life than these so-called Protestants, which I found kind of shocking, but it was true. And then when we talk about conservatism in terms of respecting the Constitution and so on, I found Protestants much more liberal in general, all the different denominations, even the so-called spirit-filled ones, than Catholics, which is surprising. Now, I was raised Catholic, but I became a non-denominational Christian, and I was surprised that when I spoke on pro-life issues, which is a central issue for so-called conservative Christians in America, that the Roman Catholics are a lot more pro-life than the Protestants. That's the fact.
Yeah, I became what I came to call a Christian. Not a Christian, but a Christian.
Yeah.
You show me that Bible and the words in red, meaning the words actually said by Jesus, I can accept.
Right.
I think people like St. Paul were insane. You know, I do not necessarily take the word of
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are against Paul.
That's just my own peculiar bias. But in any event, Catholicism was the fundamental religion, and yet it was shaped by the country it's in. I remember when I was in high school, we had a foreign student stay with us for a while. He was from Chile, and he was very confused by the U.S. First, he could not come to our Protestant church. I mean, the Catholic Church of Chile absolutely forbid that. So this may have been an American or a more enlightened
really?
That's part of Europe. The other thing was he couldn't figure out whether we were rich or poor because our family owned two cars. And that was a mark of incredible wealth in Chile at the time. On the other hand, we must be poor because we had no servants. And everybody who's anybody had servants in Chile.
That's interesting.
So that was an interesting thing. Well, that's the beauty of having foreign exchange.
I like to take the
great deal.
I like to take the Blade Runner metaphor, and I did this earlier in the week with Josh Bernstein on Monday. And it may not be, 2050 or beyond. It may be as early as 2030 or 2029 or 2030, which is only basically 11 and a half years away. And the reason why I say this is because we have the so-called Women's March and Women's Movement, but people don't realize with the United Nations designating, I think, up to 36 different genders, but two sexes, most women, and I presented this back in 1993 at the Royal Commission on New Reproductive Technologies that traveled across Canada, as part of the Canadian parliamentary records of two papers I presented. One was on sex-selected abortion, the other was on genetic engineering for fetal tissue transplants. And I traveled even to Europe to gather information on this with the HLI, Human Life International, board of in Zurich, Switzerland. And what I discovered was that 93% of abortions worldwide are female, from the Indians in places like Vancouver, Canada, and Ashurabad, Nepal, India, etc. They actually kill female fetuses more than they do even now with genetic testing they can do with Down syndrome. The second thing that people should realize is
that... And they do that heavily in China as well.
Right, and China, the same thing. And what you have to understand is now with genetic engineering and PCR tests and so on, you don't need to do an amniotic sampling to get rid of a child with Down syndrome or another problem. And what people should start realizing is that what's going on now is as totally... The women don't see the end from the beginning. One-third of the Generation Z desire to have sex with a cyborg rather than a female. And so the female sex in the future may become relatively biologically irrelevant. And the women don't see this, do they? That, in fact, the movement of the globalist state and the overleft, which may regain some power, will outlaw wild reproduction for genetic and social reasons, and so-called the protection of the health of the mother is to not actually have to carry a fetus at all. And so where I see things going is that very deadly destruction of the structure of the family by making females biologically irrelevant to the future of civilization. That's where we're going, isn't it?
And I was afraid it would be males. I was afraid we'd be a beehive with just a few drones in it.
Well, it'll be male drones or intersex females. How's that? So looking at so biological relevance is significant, and it's my projection that the way that the globalist enviromaniacs are moving, they want to outlaw in the next 10 years wild human reproduction for multiple reasons, to control population growth, to get rid of genetic abnormalities, to get rid of actually genes that actually will cause disease and aging. For example, some genes will predispose you to diabetes. Other genes will actually lengthen your lifespan. Some genes will actually make you more likely that when you're vaccinated, you're going to actually get Asperger's or autism syndromes. In fact, those genes are more common in black and Hispanic populations than white. So if you're vaccinated, you're roughly 3 to 5 times more likely to become have your blood-brain barrier breakdown and develop problems if you're vaccinated with heavy metal and adjuvant toxins in the vaccine. People go, oh, that's racist. No, it's not. It's called biology. Okay? And many people are multiracial anyway. But if you carry those specific genes, you're a sitting target for toxins like genetically modified food, scalar radiation from cell phones, Wi-Fi networks that break down your blood-brain barrier, or toxic water. And people don't get this, that in the future, the globalists will kind of try to justify that they can make give you a perfect baby. That'll be like, you know, a made-to-order baby. Right eye color, right IQ, athletic performance, long life, etc. And we are moving toward what are called the state of Gattaca, that movie that came out about 10 years ago, where the super wealthy are not just wealthy financially, they're wealthy genetically. That's where we're going, isn't it?
It is, and I have a very interesting tie into that. But first, we do want to retain diversity. And
right.
The essence of that is, look at the Irish potato famine, where they planted the entire country in one perfect potato. The potato is native to Peru, and thereabouts the Spanish brought them back to Europe. But they planted all of Ireland in one potato, and that potato happened to have a particular vulnerability to blight.
Right.
And so the whole crop could be wiped out. 1 million people could starve to death because they planted everything in that perfect, flawless crop. The difficulty being, in Peru, they have never had a potato famine like that in their recorded and unrecorded history, because they plant 60 to 80 different kinds of potatoes per acre.
Right.
They don't plant one variety. They plant a whole mix of varieties, so no one disease can kill them all.
This is part of the monoculture philosophy of Mount Satan or Monsanto, that once genetically modified monocultures, it may increase the chances of a true disease-induced massive famine. It's a very dangerous thing. Plus, also, genetically modified crops are not accepted because the infrared signature to your tissues is not biologically normal. When you have a tomato that has scorpion genes, the biology of your cells and of insects looks at it not as a tomato, but as a scorpion because it's got pheromones and biological molecules that make it look like a scorpion to them. Nasty.
Very nasty. Now, here's what fascinates me. Back in 1997, in a piece I did in the Wall Street Journal, I argued that Republicans should support new hate crimes legislation, and in particular, they should demand that it include the one thing that liberals and Democrats never put in hate crime legislation, which is hate based on class. In other words, hate the rich. Hating the rich would become a crime under this new hate crimes legislation. After all, it is a form of hatred, like all these others. But, of course, if that happened, the Democrats would be doomed. What would their politicians say? What would their fundraisers say? What would the labor union bosses say if they couldn't say hate the rich?
Well, the thing is that without diversity in a culture, all the way from children with Down syndrome like my daughter to people with high IQs and talents, whether it's musical talent or in business talents or whatever, you don't have a viable culture. You need to have, like the potatoes, a whole range of different cultures and talents.
Right. You know? Even in Huxley's Brave New World, they had different castes. They had the dumb people, the smart people, and so on, to do the different functions of society and be ideally suited to fit into each one and to be maximally happy doing that kind of work with the kind of mind and body they had. Now, what I wrote in that column at the time was this protection of the rich against hate crimes is probably justified because riches could be, or becoming rich, could be a genetic predisposition, just like skin color, just like sexual preference, and so on. And accordingly, if a person is, if it's not his fault that he's rich, if he's just genetically predisposed to be that way, it's just as wrong to discriminate against him as it would be to discriminate against a black person for being black. And I remember at the time, the editors at Wall Street Journal said, "Boy, this is pretty funny, isn't it?" And I said, "Who's joking? I'm quite serious about that." Well, now, in the London Daily Mail of July 9th and 10th, they have a new analysis. Being rich and successful really is in your DNA.
Right.
Dealt the right genes determines whether you get on in life. If you have genes that predispose you to be very good at education, at learning, those same genes also predispose you to become much more socially, upwardly mobile,
right,
rich. In other words, there is a genetic argument for protecting the rich.
Exactly. And you know what I would say? I would say the characteristics of people that are rich. And I look, for example, at my grandfather, Leon Nyma, who only got grade 3, but he had talents going back to his family that were going back to the Coens back, 2,800 years ago. There's three characteristics that make you rich. Number one is persistence. In other words, you don't just give up easily, and you're not easily turned into a state of failure. The second thing that happens is you're socially very adept at not only teaching yourself new skills to survive, you're a survivalist, but social skills to help other people, including in your family. So you're very family-oriented. So you'll see people that are successful, they have success, they come from successful families. So, for example, you'll see this in our culture, for example, in black families. They're not cohesive. They don't protect their children once they fail and screw up. They don't pull them back out of the muck. And what they're learning as teenagers, early 20s, to actually succeed, maybe in their late 20s, and all of a sudden, before you know it, they have their own business and they're succeeding by the time they're 35 or 40. So that's the second characteristic. The third characteristic is a curiosity. And if you're not curious, you're not going to be able to discover the anomalies of whether it's business or creativity or whatever. We're going to have on hour two Russ Wemsimer, who's proceeded with my patents on Red Deer Velvet DR. He's patenting my other technologies too. But he's an amazing patent officer. People don't understand the largest amount of theft from America, $300 billion a year, is not physical property. It's not metals. It's not minerals. It's not oil. It's intellectual property. And the people that are curious, the people have those other characteristics that they tend to have we call a solid family, so they'll nurture their sons and daughters in their 20s and 30s and make sure that they actually have not only the personality and persistence and business skills, but they continue to survive catastrophes because they have a strong family background.
Down a very old intellectual argument for you to chew upon for a moment.
Yeah.
In the Jewish culture, the Kohanim were the priestly class.
Right.
They were the people on top. They were the intellectuals. They were the high scholars. They were the people asking the deep Talmudic questions and so being curious.
Right.
Why were they like that? Well, because in the shtetl or in the ghetto, if there wasn't enough food for everybody, other families would take part of their food and give it to the rabbis, the Kohanim's family, to protect his children, because they were regarded as the most important children in the community. In other words, intellectual, curious genes were protected and nourished in the Jewish community. They were given an evolutionary advantage. Meanwhile, in medieval Europe, if you were an intellectual, how could you become a Christian intellectual? Well, you basically had to become a monk. What did becoming a monk or a priest mean? It meant you were celibate. And at least in theory, your genes would not be passed on. And you wonder why Jews appear to be smarter than other people around you.
Exactly. If you look at the number of Nobel Prizes and patents and so on, it's by Jewish Kohanim, period. Isn't it? So, by the way, talking about that principle, Donald Trump is a smart man, but he is surrounded by globalists, high-level masons, and people with different agendas than his. And he's Samuel-less. In other words, in the ancient Hebrew society, which is structured just like the ancient cultures realized in Egypt and elsewhere, in Samaria, that if the priest class was always above the warrior king. And the reason is, when you have a modern leader like Trump that's surrounded by people that don't have necessarily his intellectual or spiritual, best interests in mind, he is Samuel-less. He needs you, yourself, Lowell, Ponte, John W. Spring, myself. He needs a collective of what we call intellectual priest class to actually give him good information. Doesn't that need to be the fact that we're paid? In fact, what people don't understand, that the tithe was never, ever intended for the church. The church was to provide a project based on the wants and needs. And if some people were very wealthy, maybe they're going to give 30% of their income or 40%. And other people couldn't afford a thing or they'd starve to death. What the church was to do is to put forward a project and say, let's do this, like build a church or whatever, and ask the people to build it, but never, ever to take a tithe, which I see the Mormon church does and other apostate churches are asking for tithes, when in some people they need to give more than 10%, and others giving 10% is impossible. And the tithe was intended to make sure the Kohanim would never go into business and start, farming or getting camels and doing livestock and doing other things which are mundane. They were there to preserve and be the doctors if there was a mold in a home or treat somebody at night. You never got charged to treat somebody if you're sick in ancient Israel. Health care should be a right of Americans, and it's not left or right. It's something that's, how can you have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness when if you're older, they're going to deny you care or kill you in the intensive care unit because you don't have enough insurance? How can you have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness when you're in utero and you're a female? This is why I got a kick out of these women's movement. What about the little women in utero that are not being protected by the women's movement? Okay? Let's face it, in the future, 10 years from now, women are going to become biologically, for the future of the human race, irrelevant. And they don't get it yet, do they?
And so a lot of these people that call themselves feminists are actually involved in a de facto conspiracy to kill women in utero.
Right. And all of that, if you actually look at the future of the population, the future is to create a drone class of intersexual males and females that can never reproduce, almost like they're celibate. The biological celibacy and contributing only if you're licensed, they may come in and they stretch your arm, take a punch biopsy,
yeah,
and create an ovum sperm.
And people thought that it was coincidental that we have this drastic decline in sperm count, 60% decline in testosterone levels, and so on.
That's not surprising. All these are halide pesticides, genetically modified food, and scalar radiation that's shutting down the biological axis to create maleness.
Being done in Europe, too.
By the way, all by design.
Craig Smith and I deal with a lot of this in our latest book, Money, Morality, and the Machine. I know you love the book. But the good news is anyone listening right now can get this book absolutely free and postpaid. It cost $20 at Amazon. You can get it for nothing, and it's certainly worth reading. Also, there's a money-back guarantee. If you pay nothing and don't like the book, we'll refund every penny you paid. Toll-free number to get it, just 800-630-1492, like the year Columbus sailed the ocean blue. That's 1-800-630-1492. Craig Smith, by the way, you see every week with Neil Cavuto on Fox Business. He's a very successful businessman, probably almost a Kohanim himself, who didn't stay put.
as I was mentioning earlier, my grandfather, who only had grade 3, because he came from that line of people that are intellectually curious and willing to teach themselves, he became a candy maker, master candy maker at 13. He also ended up becoming so wealthy from business and jewelry business, taught by his uncles, that he had a suite beside Frank Sinatra at the Copacabana every winter for 3 or 4 months, every winter in Cuba before the revolution in 59. And people have to understand, like myself or my sons or anybody, it's a gist of the genes that's been preserved through centuries because it's important to actually have the mix of people that are curious to literally reinvent the future. And that's why people like Trump need desperately to have your wisdom, the wisdom of people like Lowell Ponte, John W. Spring, Dr. Bill Deagle, that feed him the true knowledge and wisdom that will allow society to exist. Now, I see a complete lack of wisdom on the left. The left are now, when I look at the Attorney General here in California, who now wants to be the new female Obama, these people are self-described, egomaniac, narcissistic, suicidal, political hacks.
Well, and they're going to... there is one person for whom being on the left may not be a total disaster. The new president, just elected, the socialist president of Mexico, has just announced that he is planning his own border police force. He is massively beefing up and building walls on the southern border of Mexico.
Right.
And he's announced that he may have a lot more in common with Donald Trump than people realize.
Well, I think it's titles. One of the things I find really amazing is everybody wants to put everybody in a box. And when you refer to this new Mexican president, in fact, a lot of his policies are populist, which in many ways you'd see once he sits down and dialogues with Trump, they're actually alignment on the same thing. We have to control borders. His southern border of Mexico and the immigration laws of Mexico are what we should already have, but we don't. And when he starts implementing them and he cleans up the drug cartels with the assistance of the U.S. military, Mexico is going to be a stable place that we can do business with. Right now, for example, when Canada wants to be, act like a jilted female ex-spouse or something to America, and they're actually putting the screws to us with tariffs, hey, let's have a level playing field. Let's make Canada prosper by doing more business, both intellectual properties. There's a lot of smart Canadians inventing technology. For example, the best silicon batteries in the world are made in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and they have a branch plant in Northern California in Eureka. There's a lot of smart Canadians that can contribute not only to technology, but to energy and to all kinds of things. And it's intellectual property that's going to be the most valuable in the future, whether it's quantum intelligence, smart intelligence systems, robotics, 3D printing, all kinds of technologies. As I said before, 90% of the new technologies and jobs of the future in 10 years from now haven't been invented yet. People don't get that, do they?
Alas, they don't. By the way, I encourage people to go to WorldNet Daily or WND.com and look up some of my columns, which we haven't had quite enough time to discuss today. Who does own the weather? Well, it turns out that now that Iran is being hit by a severe drought, they are blaming Israel for stealing their rain and snow.
And I'll tell you who's owning the weather. There's five countries that have weather modification technology. It's also linked to space weather, which also is affecting because the sun is acting very strangely, and it's acting in a way that preceded the Carrington event 150 years ago, that literally, if it happened today, it wouldn't just be knocking out telegraph lines. It would knock out the Western electrical culture and the cybernetic control of commerce and everything. People aren't ready for anything that's coming in the future, are they? And for them to blame it, we could have...
The event from the sun in 1859 devastated the world's telegraph systems.
Right. Here's what I think. We have five countries that can modify weather. Why don't we come together, these five countries, us, Russia, and these other three countries, and work on a way to modify the weather to improve rainfall in the right areas, to reduce pollution, and stop the issues that they talk about global warming by changing sea and air currents around the planet. We could actually have a virtual model of it and actually stabilize the ecosphere of the planet so there would be more normalized climate instead of extremes, rainfall where it's appropriate, say, in the West Coast and other areas or the Middle East, so that the most driving force for immigration from the Middle East and North Africa is drought that we could reverse. We could have rain falling on the Sahara Desert and regreen it. We have to change our philosophy of let's collaborate scientifically so we can create a stable world and we become the energy flux density force to stabilize the ecosphere rather than becoming an extinction-level event. That's what we are right now. We are literally...
Michio Kaku points out that is the sign of a stage 3 advanced civilization, that they can control the climate of a planet.
We already can control it. We just haven't collaborated to do it. We need the will.
The challenge is there really is no such thing as good weather. You might want a sunny day for a picnic, and the farmer down the way might want rain for his crops.
Yeah, but you can reach a balance that's reasonable that allows you to say, hey, on such and such a day, you're going to have sun, planet. There's going to be rain, so the crop will come in your state.
Well, there's ways. The first thing to do then is do away with the trial lawyers.
Yeah, our biggest problem in America is we have this...
be an act of God.
Yeah. Our biggest problem in America is we have too many lawyers in politics, industry, and making regulations, and not enough patent officers, creativity scientists, tool and die makers creating new industries. That's our biggest problem, and collaboration across cultures. That's what we need.
More law, less lawyers.
Exactly.
Imagine a pill that can improve your focus, your memory, your sleep. A catalyst to improve your brain chemistry. Dr. Bill's Cognition Plus is truly the smarter in an hour pill. A combination of amino acids, trace minerals, and B vitamins, Cognition Plus is made with specialized herbal extracts that will enhance and support brain function. Our customers say,
I feel more focused.
My memory's getting better.
I can work longer with more useful hours.
Power up your neurotransmitters that have been depleted, like dopamine and norepinephrine. Stimulate the release of others, like serotonin and oxytocin. Improve circulation and energy production. Protect your mind and your loved ones today. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Cognition Plus at 888-212-8871 or go online to NutriMedical.com. That's 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. And listen to the NutriMedical Report on the Genesis Radio Network with open lines every weekday. NutriMedical.com, bringing nutrition and medicine together.